So you're listening to IsraelScene.com. I'm Steve.
And this is Yoram.
And so today we have an interview with Rafi Dobrin. Yoram interviewed Rafi, who 50 years ago made Aliyah, or I should say immigrated to Israel from South Africa. And he shares his thoughts on decency in Israel. He's also the founder of the Society of Concerned Optimists in Israel. And he's a good friend of Yoram's. And so we're going to go right to the interview. I hope you enjoy it. I certainly did.
It's 1957. I came here as a young kid. And one of the things that struck me pretty almost immediately, despite the awe and the joy that I felt at being here, was people in those days were not very nice. People scowled a lot. People shouted at each other. You had a fight to get on a bus. And it just didn't make sense to me that after everything that Jewish people had gone through, the exile, the persecution, the War of Independence, I'm talking about 1957 when I came, it didn't make sense that we wouldn't be doing our best to set up a great little country that was good to live in for everybody, that people wouldn't be nice to each other, that people wouldn't be trying to lead their lives according to principles of integrity and stuff like that. In those days, I was quite amazed. Today, I realize that it was perfectly natural for people then to be the way they were. And even today, it doesn't make sense, but I can understand why we have the situation that we have today, why people still aren't always terribly nice to each other, and why we have the leadership and the political system that we have today. It makes sense because if you take into consideration how the state of Israel was set up, we had to do everything in a great hurry. Almost from one day to the next, the state was, we suddenly had a state on our hands. We had not been able to make the necessary preparations. At the same time, we were thrust into a war of survival, while hundreds of thousands of people were coming from Arab countries and Europe. Many of these people themselves were refugees. They were speaking different languages. They came from different cultures. It was a melting pot. It was a pressure cooker. It was a concrete mixer all in one. And from that kind of beginning, we had to set up a state. I must say that today, almost 50 years after I first came here, people generally are much nicer than they were in those days. Like I said earlier, you had to actually fight to get on a bus. When you went into a shop in those days, the shopkeeper often scowled at you. Today it's not like that anymore. But it's not good enough just to set up a country that's nice to live in, a country that's good to live in for everybody, because today it's a question of survival. The world order has changed, the regional order has changed, and we are really in a very serious situation regarding our very survival. Now, in order to cope with the problems and the threats that face us, we need two basic things. We need a belief in ourselves, and we need a spirit, a strong national spirit.
Can you explain what you mean by believing in ourselves?
Yeah, well, belief in ourselves means believing in our ability to get things done properly, to be competent, to be dependable. Yeah. To believe in ourselves, we need to know that we can make the right decisions at all levels and that we can get the best leaders out of our population. And there's really only one way to have those abilities on a national scale. You've got to have people with the necessary qualities such as basic qualities, honesty, consideration for others, patience, integrity, especially integrity. And why? Why are these the qualities that are necessary to have a belief in yourself as a people? Well, simply because people with integrity usually try to do the best possible job they can. At every level, people with integrity will give you the best possible service without cheating you. People with integrity will fulfill their commitments to the best of their ability. Yeah? They'll usually know how to talk to each other, to listen to each other. People with integrity usually know how to coordinate their efforts and to work together for a common cause. Yeah.
Before we go on to another subject, how do you think you stimulate or you help people to develop as people with integrity?
Well, I think this is the key question. This is the key question because we have to promote this idea. We have to have a nation imbued with a sense of integrity. This is probably, if we don't do that, we might not even make it, because integrity has a bearing on just about everything at every level and, of course, on a governmental level. But the question was, how do we imbue people with that? Look, let me put it this way. Many people in this country have always lived their lives according to all those principles that I've mentioned. Many people in this country, newcomers and the old timers, the seventh generation types, many people have a great deal of integrity and they bring up their children that way too. But the trouble is that their presence is not always felt. The shenanigans of all the jerks are usually more noticeable and more felt than the decent way that these people conduct their lives. And so we just have to make more and more people join the decent people. And how do you do that? By in a number of ways. First of all, people who are already decent, many of them don't realize that they're decent, they just happen to be that way. But they should know that simply by conducting their lives according to principles of common decency, what we call in Hebrew, derech eretz, being a mensch, they do have an effect on the people around them. They have an effect on their immediate family, on their workmates, sometimes just on casual encounters with passers-by. There has to be a trend. In order to really get this thing going, we have to create a trend to make it the in thing for people to simply be nice to each other.
I'd like to mention that we have here a very unusual situation, is that Rafi, as you can hear, is not from the United States. People who are not from the United States sometimes also speak English. And Rafi, you were from where originally?
South Africa.
And Rafi's been here so long that most of his work now is in Hebrew, so he's busy translating from Hebrew back to English, which is certainly not what happens to most of us who've come here from the United States, at least recently, but Rafi's been here for more than recently. What did you do when you came here, Rafi? What kind of things have you been doing all these years?
Well, I came here at the age of 20, and there was a program which still exists, I understand, called Machal. It was a Not the heroic Machal of 1948. It was a continuation of that, where they had kids from various countries coming and doing army service here, usually in Nachal. It was a great way of becoming integrated in the country. And after that, I got married. We spent a while in a kibbutz, and we've been living in Jerusalem since 1962.
Rafi, I know you've had a lot of ideas on how to stimulate these positive trends in the country, and you've actually gone out and done something about it. And one of the issues we were talking about in language and translation is that you do this in Hebrew in order to reach the Israelis. So that puts you at a disadvantage in being interviewed in English. Can you describe how you're going about trying to stimulate and trying to have your ideas become part of the culture here?
Yes, for the moment it's been a lone effort. I won't say a sole effort, because I know that there are many other people in the country doing exactly this. Yeah. It's been on the level of writing letters to newspapers, talking, trying to get on the radio and talk on various programs. There are many things involved in we're talking actually of an ethos, of a national ethos, which includes not just straightforward integrity, but also being involved in society, trying to help out. One of the things that I've done in the last few months was set up a group of people to volunteer to tutor needy kids who just are finding it very difficult with their studies. And we've got over 50 people helping kids with their studies in all subjects. I've set up a website and it's almost ready to – it's on the website. It's on the web, but it still needs a lot of work. I'm getting material printed. I'm also getting ready to give Chugei Bayit, to conduct Chugei Bayit on the subject how to promote this whole idea.
Can you explain what Chugei Bayit are?
A Chug Bayit is where people just get together in somebody's home and we discuss a certain subject. Now, to get back to how do you spread this whole idea of integrity, the nation is ripe for it. Everybody wants this to be a nation where honesty and dependability are more widespread. Everybody talks about it all the time. They actually talk about it in negative terms. They say that everybody, kulam ganavim, everybody's a thief. You can't trust anybody. Yeah, and we're talking not just about the politicians. And actually, I point out to these people who are so negative that that's not true, because I just know from my own life, whenever I have a car, I have an electrician, I have a plumber, yes, your average run-of-the-mill plumber, and I can depend upon him to do the job and to give me a decent price. I have a good mechanic, I have a marvelous doctor, I have various people who do certain services for me, yeah, and they're all as nice as you could find anywhere. I do shopping in the grocer. I go to the supermarket I stay away from. I like personal contact. But the vast majority of people that I work with in this country, and most of them are people born here or brought up here, they're not Anglo-Saxons, and they're all very nice, decent, dependable, trustworthy people, yeah? So a lot of people in this country are that way. The trouble is that there are too many who are not. And the thing to do is to imbue in people a sense of positiveness, that they can make a difference. Everybody can make a difference. I told my plumber, he came here the other day, I hate preaching. I really hate it, but sometimes I feel that just for the cause, I have to preach. My plumber is 60-something years old. He's a wonderful guy. He comes exactly the time he says he comes. He does the job wonderfully, and he's reasonable. And I said to him, Tzion, you don't realize, I said to him, do you realize that you are the quintessential Zionist? And he gave me a look as though I was absolutely crazy. And I said, yes, you are doing Zionism here. Yeah, because this is what Zionism is all about. Jewish people living in the land of Israel and living well and doing whatever they're doing the way it should be done. Yeah, and that's what you've done. And you're wonderful and you've made my day. And suddenly the man just beamed. And he walked out of the gate. And then he suddenly turned around and he came up to me and he shook my hand. Now, I don't think that Tzion needed any preaching about being a decent person. But I do feel that for at least for a moment, and maybe even longer, Tzion went out and he spread something to maybe the next visit where he went. Probably he was less gruff. You see, people in this country have a mode of behavior which is pretty aggressive and abrasive and gruff and rough. Yeah? And that's not conducive. It's not conducive to producing a positive spirit. And this is one of the things that we have to be. We have to be nice to each other. Anglo-Saxons usually are quite nice to each other. Yeah? Actually, Anglo-Saxons have a problem, or they are a problem. When somebody is not nice to them, oh, they know very well how not to be nice back. And I say, this is not right. When somebody is not nice to you in Israel, I'm talking about in Israel, if you're in New York or in Melbourne or in Cape Town, do what the hell you want. No, that's not necessarily so. But as I would say, in Israel especially, when somebody's not nice to you, try and be patient. Yeah, know that these people had a different upbringing. They had different way of seeing and doing things. And if you can answer a person quietly and calmly and nicely, you'll invariably find that that person's tone changes to you. That is also part of the thing of changing society.
Rafi, I know you've been trying to bring your message into the schools here, and that's part of the reason that you're so involved in speaking and in functioning and in thinking in Hebrew on these subjects. Can you tell us a little bit about what it's like and what you do in the schools?
Actually, I spent a good year preparing a talk for schools, and the talk was about the connection between integrity and being an Israeli. And after I spent a year preparing it, I started to make contacts with the schools. The thing is that schools in Israel today, because of the security situation, have become barricaded. You can't just walk into any school and ask to see one of the teachers or the headmaster or headmistress. It's an impossibility. So you have to rely on the telephone system. But the thing is that with the telephone system today, you're always, but always answered by a machine. And I found that after about 6 months of daily trying to make contacts with headmasters and headmistresses, etc., I was able to get to speak to schools. Yeah, the results were, I don't know if the kids were just being nice to me, but they actually applauded when I finished my talks. I don't know if I made any difference in their lives and their attitudes. I do know that I didn't do enough. This is going to be an ongoing process. I am actually, in order to really make changes, it is not enough for me to conduct a solo thing. We have to attract as many people as possible, become actively involved in this. The idea is actually to have the whole nation being part of this thing. I didn't know, I've been struggling with what to call it, whether to call it a society or an association. I think the thing to call it is a voice. And I'm thinking of calling this thing, this trend, this movement, the voice of concerned optimists in Israel. I think that's what we're going to call ourselves, the voice of concerned optimists in Israel. We need as many people to be involved. We need people to speak at these Chugei Bayit. We need people to be to prepare themselves to go and speak in the schools. We need people to be able to break down the barricades and gain the entrance for those of us who are able to speak in the schools. We need to print material. We need funding. So anybody who's got funds or anybody who can collect funds can acquire the funds. Funding is needed to print material. Every time, for instance, somebody behaves obnoxiously, instead of answering him in kind, you simply hand him a leaflet. On the leaflet is printed a rose or some flower, and inside there's something humorously done about appropriate attitudes and behavior. All this needs participation of as many people as possible. I do believe, I keep telling myself, Rafi, you've got to be a humble guy. You really got to be a modest guy. But I really believe, and now not humbly, that this is probably one of the most important enterprises that is going to get off the ground at the moment. It is really of tremendous importance, not just to make Israel a nice country that's good to live in for everybody, but so that we can survive.
Thank you very much, Rafi. Do you have anything pressing that you would like to add, or have we really said it all?
Let me just give my thank you. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I think that you're doing marvelous work. I would like to say that if anybody wants to contact me, my phone number is Jerusalem 02-642-2347. My website is www.israelandtruth, that's one word, israelandtruth.org, www.israelandtruth.org. Thank you.
Thank you, Rafi.